Welcome to the Responsible Management Podcast from the University of Bradford School of Management. My name is David Smyshire. I'm the school's Director of Business and Community Engagement and delighted to be hosting the podcast once again. Today's topic is leadership and change for SMEs. Very broad topic, but we'll try and do it justice in the next 40 minutes or so. And I'm delighted to be joined by two great contributors on this. So Martin Hill is a Bradford Engineering graduate. He's an extensive career working in mobile technology and leading digital transformation, including managing the design and development of the first touchscreen interface for smartphones and working on the integration of GPS within smartphones. He's had his own company concerned with the management of large-scale software development projects and has acted as a consultant for SMEs and corporates and mentored and coaches dozens of business leaders over the last 25 years. For the last few years, through his own company, he's been working on permissioned distributed ledger tech and now specifically on ultra-secure data storage and sharing platforms to stop mass data loss resulting from cyber attacks. I think we now have to call Dr. George Medin a podcast regular. I forget now, George, how many times this is, but he's very welcome to be back with us again. He's assistant professor in leadership and management here at the School of Management. As well as his experience in higher education, he's got extensive industry experience as well, having set up half a dozen of his own businesses and been director of half a dozen more in both the public and the private sector. He's also been a business consultant and he has a particular interest in the psychology of the workplace. And George and I, of course, teach leadership and change across programs here at the school. So we're all going to be chipping into this conversation. I thought I'd get that in first. So welcome both and thank you for doing this. And if we can start with the question we always start with, I'll come to you, Martin. What does responsible management mean for you?
Yeah, thanks, David. Well, for me, responsible management, of course, it starts with ethics. Ethics is extremely important, but it's not. A lot of people say, well, is it all about ethics? No, it's not. It's also about the well-being, the welfare of the people involved in the business, the stakeholders. It's also about the place of the business in the community. It's about sustainability. And really, I think it's a holistic thing that really being totally aware of the environment that the business exists in.
Brilliant. George, you recognise that, I'm sure.
Absolutely. But responsible management, I'm a bit more cynical. These academics have got hold of the word responsible management. And it started off with the fundamentals of management, which is the finance, your structure and your people. And now we've got this smorgasbord of extras, which is this sustainability, ethics, shareholders, which we're always in the first place. But academics, when you get into these things, stir pots up. But the idea of ethics, sustainability and people are fundamental new ideas.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? It's almost sacrilege to say it, you know, given our own kind of ethos and positioning around responsible management. But we shouldn't need that word. It should be all management, all practice should be responsible. We shouldn't need to qualify it.
It's the academic state. They get involved.
That's yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we're coming on to talk about change and managing and leading change in organisations. I guess there's a key need to be responsible there as well.
Absolutely. I think the first thing I would say is, of course, all businesses exist in dynamic environments and actually very difficult environment in general. So change is, and particularly for small and medium-sized enterprises, change is almost the lifeblood, really, of such organizations. And I think there is a responsibility on everyone involved in those organizations to understand the environment in which they exist, and that change is a fundamental requirement. You know, you can't stand still. And so I think responsibility starts there, and I think part of the job of the leader then of such an organization is to make sure that everyone understands that if they don't already.
Yeah, so there's the risk of stagnation. You know, if a business isn't transforming, it means by definition kind of going backwards. You know, we'd recognize that, George.
I think one of the things we were just having a quick chat about, where we're having a cup of tea before we got here, was the rate of change has always been quite high. But this world we're in at the moment with the dynamic situation that seems to change every single day. And one of the problems with that for me is that when your manager's under stress to actually adapt it, well, U-turn central UK, the biggest problem we have is we're adapting to the situation and then taking our people with us often becomes a secondary factor, yet that is primary to the successive change.
I t- totally agree with that. I think it's a failure of leadership, actually, if you don't take the people with you. It's very, very difficult to implement change if the people in the organization, one, don't understand why it's required. They have to understand that, and they have to understand the direction of travel. They have to understand overall how that fits with the strategic aims of the business, which can change, of course, but they have to know that. And in order for change to be successful, there has to be pretty full understanding. Resistance to change is a very real thing. You know, it's we all know that, you know, it's one of the things that has to be overcome. And, you know, a major part of that is participative leadership, not just, in this case, you know, directive leadership. It has to be fully participative so that people do understand what's going on and why.
One of the things that I spend some time working on is the idea that managers who are stressed with the rapidly changing situations that we're in often lose their empathy for other people who are stressed as well. And that's absolutely core to engagement. If you're going to take your people with you, you need this empathy. And that, unfortunately, stress strips out of people.
Yes, I think that can happen as well in small organizations, sometimes where the leader is, let's say, a very brilliant technologist, let's say, if it's a technology or a product company. Sometimes these people can be so wrapped up in their subject matter that they forget or they leave behind the people issue. They, in their own mind, can see probably very well, you know, where with the direction and what needs to happen. But they do forget the fact that they have to really explain that, yeah? And they have to make that clear.
It comes back to, again, you know, George has opened up the fourth wall, and we were chatting over a cup of tea before this, and we were talking about the transition from entrepreneur to a business. That's part of that as well, isn't it? Because, you know, entrepreneurs often have a passion for a product or a solution or a technology or something, and shifting from the mindset of being about that to running the business is a really difficult transition to make, isn't it? And that can be difficult on the individual, but it also be, you know, if we talk about change in the very broad sense, it can be difficult for the business as a whole, because that person's struggling to move the business to a different footing. At the same time, they're struggling with their own position and identity and the basis of their expertise as part of that as well.
One of the things that, for me, with the entrepreneur, when you set off, you typically have a handful of people who know each other's names, know each other's strengths, weaknesses. Do you know what? They often sit here eyeballing each other for the day-to-day stuff. But as the businesses grow and more people come in and we get this job diversification, I'm now the marketing guy, I'm now the finance guy, the early starters often feel as though they've lost something, that the way we do it around here has changed, and that loyalty maybe changes. Martin, what do you think of that?
I think it, that along that theme, you know, of the leaders or founders of small companies, or so going from the, you know, the entrepreneurial situation to the small to the medium-sized company, I think it is often difficult for, you know, people starting with, you know, in the entrepreneurial sense, to truly let a team function as it needs to function, and to understand that in actual fact they don't need to know everything. Use the skills and the knowledge of the people around you, that it is truly a team effort. Empower your people to participate and be involved in the business in the right way. You know, this thing about, you know, leadership and management are two different things. Yeah, so as the leader, okay, you need to make the direction of travel clear, okay, but you don't always have to have all the answers yourself, right? That's what your team is for. That's what the people around you are for. And so, yes, I think that is this is very challenging for people, I think, and particularly young people starting businesses, you know, for the first time, very skilled in their subject matter area. There's great subject matter experts, but probably lacking in the experience of building teams and operating teams in that way.
Yeah. That's why you need to go to Bradford Business School.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, if you've got a growing business, we can help and support that. The Help to Grow Management Programme, George teaches on that alongside myself, is there for exactly that reason, to help businesses on that transformational kind of process. And it's a theme, I mean, we're talking about it. I'm going to raise the... We're talking about the need for quality communication from leadership, aren't we? And that's about vision and mission, but it's also that kind of day-to-day level about hearts and minds and holding hands and walking people through. And that's a lot to ask of somebody in a leadership position.
That's absolutely right. You've got to be the person who can do everything. As you rightly say, we start off a business with a specific skill, whether that's a technical skill or some sales skill or something. But then all of a sudden, you tend to leave the thing you're good at and start to become this manager. And one of the other things that for me, I'm particularly interested in now, the team responds to that. And if you've had a close relationship with people and who often have a problem that we call title aggrandizement. In other words, there's only four of you and you've become the marketing director. Hang on, the finance director. There's only four of us, for God's sake. And what happens as the business grows, you often feel as though you're on the back foot and you're not valued. And for me, entrepreneurs often find that their business partners often shell off in the growth phase. And you know what? Sometimes it's set up in competition with you because they feel they've lost that communication and loyalty.
Yes, I agree with that. And I think as well, part of the problem is that there are as many ideas about leadership and what a leader needs to be as there are, you know, it's just a never-ending stream of these things. And I think that there can be a great amount of, a lot of confusion, I think, in people when they've suddenly got a business to run, they've got people to lead. And I think this is one area where I think mentors and coaches are extremely important. I'm a huge believer in that. I think the only real way, in fact, that an inexperienced leader starting a business and running a business for the first time, the only way they can really get the guidance and the input that they need to develop and learn as a leader is actually to have an experienced mentor. And of course, there's very much more of that going on now than there was when I first started my career, fortunately. So I would say, you know, it's essential, I think, that, you know, young leaders do maybe look for a mentor and look for that kind of guidance and input to help them become good leaders.
See, one of the things I teach my students who are going into, I teach the consultancy module, so they go into this. So we get these kids who are coming out at 21, going to be consultants. And one of the things I teach them is a lot of people these days have been to business school. They've taught all the same modules that you've done. They've learned all the same stuff. But that in itself is not enough to run a business. And that's usually what people are looking for. The bits that the textbook didn't say, well, how do I implement this stuff?
Yes, I totally agree with that. And I think then we bring in, I mean, of course, there's no replacement for experience. Yeah. And I think a very important part of leading and of, you know, developing any business is recognizing patterns of almost instinctively reacting to context. You know, things change, people change, people are different, the environment can change, the competition can change. You know, the context is extremely important. And it's very much the case that, you know, some people can lead very, very well in one particular context and then not very well at all in another context. Mm-hmm. And that's very clear. So I think, again, you know, to me, I think this maybe the use of you know, non-exec directors, mentors, call them what, you know, which however they appear in the business, I think are very, very important to add that experience of helping leaders to react to context.
I'm 100% with you there. This idea of the non-exec coming in and giving the bit that's missing. For me, one of the hardest parts is to recognise when I've set up my businesses, that's the bit that you need to have. And a second issue that came up was, where do you find the good ones? Because I've found a few that weren't so good.
Yes, of course, it's not easy. Yeah, and I think every organisation has to have its methods of trying to do that. And I think, again, it's usually, you know, asking a lot of questions, you know, asking your network, checking, just making sure. It's not easy. Yeah.
Do you find the entrepreneur with the big ego? Because sometimes you need a bit of a big ego to go for an entrepreneur. It's a big gamble that you've actually got to recognize your weaknesses. And that itself is something that's going to be quite hard to do.
I think it's absolutely true that any leader to be really successful, you have to get out of your own way.
I'm going to steal that, by the way, for my course.
Well, you cannot be the whole growth of the thing. I mean, we used to talk about hard and soft skills, mm-hmm. And of course the growth of emotional intelligence and mm-hmm. empathic kind of responses in leadership. And these are really important, and it's very, very hard for ego-driven individuals to operate on this side of the spectrum. They really have to get out of their own way, and they have to be able to see things from others' perspectives and have to try and understand what's going on there.
And it's about self-awareness then, isn't it, is key from a leadership perspective, because you can't be everything, you can't be strong in every suit, but if you know where your, I'm trying to avoid the word weaknesses, but with areas of development, that's the PC way of saying it, isn't it? But you know what I mean? You might have a blind spot, or you might be, you know, might not be kind of focused. Having a team around you that are complementary to you. I can think of a previous boss who was real detail oriented, great on vision, really set agenda, direction, and really kept people on task. He was so unpeople oriented. He used to, cause chaos because he was so demanding, but he knew it, and he had people around him he could talk to, because my career, I did become one of those who were able to say to him, you just need to calm down. Yeah. Just let them breathe. Yeah. Or just rewind that conversation that you've just had with that person. You might need to go and knock on their office door and rebuild. And it was at that level of dynamic, but he recognized it, and he had people he could listen to. So I'm dancing around the word authenticity from a leadership perspective. So, knowing and showing yourself is part of that, but also knowing the areas where you need support and ensuring you've got that support is key.
Yes. And I think it's showing that you have the interests of the company at heart and the people that constitute that company, and not just your own self. And I just think a very, very simple example of this is if the CEO, the leader, whatever, of an organization is sat in a small team meeting and there's a task in hand, and the leader says, well, we should do it this way. And one of the team members, they sit and they think about this for a while, and somebody says, well, actually, if we do it this way, then we'd save money and we'd save time, and that would be better. Well, the leader then has two choices. They can either say, no, we're going to do it my way, right? Or they can look at it and think about it and say, well, actually, yeah, that's great. Thank you very much. We're going to do it your way. Now, which is the better option? Now, if the leader does that and is out of their own way, so what they want is a solution which is best for the company, they're showing leadership. And they're also then showing the team that individual has come up with that idea feels great because they've been heard. And they recognize, and then that leader gains respect. It's very simple, but it's,
But that's about, for me, confidence in that position. The less confident the leader is, the more likely they're to say, no, we have to do it my way, in my experience. Confidence in the team and respecting and valuing feedback. Communication is a two-way street. It's about the dialogue. It's about not just me getting a message across in a compelling way. It's about hearing the feedback and the responses to that. I mean, talking about change, resistance is an inevitability, and people often perceive resistance as a negative. My line on that is resistance is somebody that cares. The person who just stood there and letting it wash over them is more of an issue than the person who is actively telling you they've got a concern. And if you're not listening to those people, that's the failing. I'm just cutting into the podcast to tell you a little bit about the offer that we have for businesses locally as part of the business and community engagement support. We have our Knowledge Transfer Network, that's regular networking events where you can come on campus, meet like-minded people, hear from some of our and leading industry experts. We have our Bradford Business Challenge projects, where we have students coming out and working with you and supporting the work that you do. We have our consultancy clinic, where we have students delivering on short-term small projects for businesses as well. There's also lots of ways that you can engage with and interact with our students as guest lecturers, as mentors on some of our entrepreneurship programs, and through involvement in the curriculum. And equally, from a research perspective, we can work with you on collaborative research. If you think there's something we can help with, please reach out to us at BACE, that's base, BACE, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you, and now back to the podcast.
Do you think that the inability to do exactly what you two have just been speaking about is why so many entrepreneurs end up getting kicked out of the thing when the business actually becomes a success? It's like a litany of these people who are amazing people who went so far, and then we had to abandon it if the company's going to survive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen so many cases of, you know, I mean, there's no room for a prima donna in these situations, and I've seen a lot of that. And if people who have that tendency can't develop and change and not be prima donnas, then usually they don't survive, and or they destroy the business. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's usually one or the other. But
and I've seen the people in like that. They recognise that that's their mindset and their way. So they go, I'm a starter. I'm never going to be the person that's going to develop the business longer term, because I'll get frustrated and upset by that. So I might be here for 6-12 months. I might get it up and running. But I'm then going to consciously step back and put teams in place, and I'll go away and do something else, because that's actually going to be, I'll be happier, I'll be confident, I'll be more successful, and the business will be better off in the long run. It's back to self-awareness.
Yes.
Yeah. So the set up and sell approach, yeah?
Yeah.
I think another important aspect is there's often, particularly in small companies, there's a great deal of uncertainty. Strategy often emerges. It's not often possible to, from the very beginning, to say this is our strategy, this is how it's going to be. And I think another important task of the leader is to lead through that uncertainty, so that people, one, they don't get worried and concerned and think, oh God, nobody knows where we're headed here or whatever. And it's often not that at all. It is because, you know, there's something of the sort of gestalt about this, in that it really truly does, meaning emerges, meaning develops, and strategy emerges from what happens.
And actually the business is going to be more successful, research and experience suggests, if you have that as a mindset. We're talking effectively about lean startup principles, aren't we? We start a business, we try something, it either works or it doesn't. You know, the business that fails is the one that doesn't see the problem. The business that succeeds is the business that says, okay, so that hasn't worked, let's try this, or let's adapt, let's develop. You know, and there are lots of examples of businesses that started out being one thing and very rapidly became something else. My all-time favourite example, whether you love the business or not, you've probably all been in it, is Starbucks. So the guy that set up Starbucks, but the guy, Howard Schultz, who built Starbucks into the kind of the global business, his original intention was to replicate Italian coffee culture. So it was going to be people stood up at bars having espressos and, you know, short duration coffees, and yeah, that was the model he was trying to build. That didn't take off. What took off was the long milky drinks and people sitting down and it becoming a very different environment to the one that he originally set up. But importantly, the business recognized and pivoted and responded to where the demand is. That's the point, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, you mentioned the lean, you know, the lean model. And I think, you know, the fail fast, learn, adapt, you know, change, move forward is a very good one, because I think that's exactly how it happens. And I think, you know, it is impossible to just get everything right from, you know, from day one. But the leader has to, again, take everybody with them and explain and make sure that everybody understands this process, and that even though there's a great amount of uncertainty, that's not an excuse for no direction. There should always be a direction, yeah, but it should be clear that direction may change, and it's the leader's job to ultimately make sure that the direction is a good one, yeah, and that the company is then executing towards that. But then obviously you measure the results, you see what's happening. If you need to change, you change, and then you move forward. And it is challenging, but it is essential.
Isn't that ultimately coming back to the idea of communicating what's happening to our people? Because people will go with you if they understand why we're doing it. if they see suddenly a left-hand turn from our chosen strategy and they don't know why we're doing that, that's when you start getting the doubt creeping in. So one of the big things we teach is that doesn't matter where you go, is it left turn, right turn, or what we term a rolling strategy, the strategy is adapting as we're going along, provided people are kept informed and crucially how it affects them. Because people tend to want to know, will it affect my job? I don't want to know what the big strategy is for the company. I want a sort of general idea, but how will all of this affect me? And that's, the, of all the things I teach at university, is tell people how it's going to affect them and they'll go with you.
Yes, I agree with that. And I think another important thing is that another important aspect of, you know, change and leadership and strategy, all these things together, I think the key thing is that the whole should always be greater than the sum of the parts. It's, you know, the whole thing is about creating value, and value is a multiple. It's creating much more out of the individual things. And I think that sense of, you mentioned, George, about, you know, well, there's finance and there's marketing, and yes, all these things, but all of these things have to be working together. Yeah. There has to be harmony in that sense. And, you know, I see a lot of companies where, you know, one part of the company is working very, very well indeed, right? But it's not, there's no integration. So in actual fact, the company fails overall because the whole is not greater than the sum of the parts in that case. And I think that's very interesting. And again, this is all part of emerging strategy. I think it's all part of the same thing.
And that's part of the leadership thing, because one of the first things I ever learned when I did my MBA many moons ago was that if you pay the marketing people to get lots and lots of sales and you give them a pretty hefty bonus for doing it, the operators downstairs who seldom get a bonus, we're getting the same amount of money for doing the extra work. So one side of the business is go, 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 and then that induces resistance in another part. And as a manager, balancing all, well, firstly, recognizing that there are these competing demands and then managing it, that for me is the skill of management.
Yeah, it's that's a really interesting one, isn't it, about the drivers of success and how we reward and recognise, you know, different aspects of the organisation and show that kind of recognition. So, you know, there's been that long-standing assumption that salespeople are financially rewarded based on volume and profitability and all the other metrics that we particularly associate with that, and that doesn't necessarily always feed into the rest of the organisation. I don't necessarily want to make it a conversation about rewards and recognition, but what I want to come back to is how do we show as leaders that we do recognise and value what people are doing?
Well, that's a really key area that I've worked in over time, particularly with operations, in that when I ask them, why do you work at this amount of turnover or this amount of products made for this amount of money that we pay you? Because if we did actually work harder for next year, that's the new baseline for next year. And then the year after, the baseline would go up. And so we can work harder, we can do loads more, but we're not going to. So it's a set amount, the set rate for the job is the answer every time. And for me, many businesses are constrained by that idea that we don't adequately reward everybody for what they do. The golden boys in marketing get their share, but the dull people in operations, they are key to the marketing people actually being successful. And a lot of managers don't recognise that interlinking of things.
Yes, I agree with that. And I think it's obviously, this is much less of a problem in the very much small, in the small company where one leadership anyway tends to be very much more direct and you get, you know, people get much more time with the leader. And but as companies grow, these issues become very important. Especially where, you know, the people who've been there from the beginning who feel that they have made, you know, the maximum contribution to this business and suddenly see as the sales department grows and they see salespeople earning potentially, you know, large amounts of money if it's commission-based predominantly and so on and so on, these situations can exist. But then to me, this is just another aspect of leadership in that the leaders of the organization again have to make clear and have to explain and have to show why generally people are recompensed as they are. one thing I would say as well is that the, you know, the founders of a company, they tend to have equity, and so their rewards are not just in what they get paid as a salary, they're also in the growth and development and increase in value of the company. So I always, in my career, I've always thought, well, I have no problem with salespeople being very, very well rewarded, because in a situation where as a business owner, you obviously want your sales to be as good as they can be. And so I think in that case, it's important that salespeople are well paid. But again, I think overall, it's just a case of always making sure that things are fair. It comes back to our whole thing here about responsible management. I think part of responsible management is making sure that there's no outlier in a business who's being, you know, paid so very much more than everybody else with no real explanation as to why that might be. That's not responsible management.
How do we deal with it then when we set up our new company and we've got four or five typically friends or family? Well, it's always a good one when family's doing it. And they outgrow, or the business outgrows their ability. How do we deal with that one? Having to sack your brother. Or we're still the brother-in-law. Go and tell your wife you've sacked the brother. How do we deal with that?
I think it always has to be about what is right for the business. And in family organizations and family companies, of course, it can be extremely difficult because, again, we've seen many cases where the right decision really was not taken because of family issues or what have you, and the decision that was actually right for the business was not the one that was taken. So the business suffers and everybody else in the business suffers. And so it's a difficult one, but you have to hope in a situation like that, again, that the leader is acting responsibly. And again, that the responsible thing is done. There are always difficult decisions to be made in any business. Always.
Your wife's not as scary as my wife. That's what I think.
There's probably a whole other podcast there on family business and transitioning a family business and some of the dynamics and the learning from that. I mean, yeah, I can think I'm probably not going to go down the rabbit hole of, you know, think of some big Yorkshire name businesses, that are family businesses, and the dynamics that those create are quite interesting from the outside looking in. But that's a whole other thing to kind of navigate. The other theme I wanted to bring in was talk a bit about the role of technology. Logical, given your interest and background, Martin, certainly. But, and we started from this position of recognizing the nature and the pace of change as being certainly as good as it's ever been or as significant as it's ever been. And technology has a kind of big part in that. So, we live in a world where AI is impacting and we still don't really understand how we are using and adapting to new technology is changing businesses fundamentally. I wonder if you had any insights on that.
Yes. Well, I think before I maybe say anything specifically about AI, I mean, we've always had, the technological world has always been hugely dynamic. Yeah. So that's not new. The technology changes very quickly, develops very quickly, and there are challenges and issues in the digital world, because we're really talking about, predominantly talking about digital transformation, which has been, the big challenge over the last few years and still is a challenge. And of course, you have a situation with, the big tech is there, and that has particular implications for organizations. You need to be ever more aware of what the competition is doing, how the technology is changing in general. Products can become obsolete very, very quickly indeed these days. And so this all feeds back into the need for change. That's a fundamental driver of change. And also, again, about lean processes, trying this, trying that, see what works, what doesn't. AI is now a fundamental challenge for companies. It's an opportunity because the capabilities of AI-based processes are what they are, and companies need to really now become very familiar with what those opportunities are, but they also need to be aware of the risks. There is a challenge to employment, to people, to the thing of potentially people being replaced by certain AI-based processes is a very real one. And so, again, I think what this does is it means that leaders have to be even more aware of all of this and even more able to rise to the challenge, and also to use people with, you know, with very specific skills and knowledge in these areas now to help their business.
I wouldn't disagree, and I think it's scarily even more complex than that, isn't it? Because at the moment we don't understand what leadership in an AI age looks like. We don't really understand AI. Even the people that are in charge of AI admit they don't really understand AI. And that's the scariest bit of it, that, you know, we don't know how these things are making decisions because it's so wrapped up in machine learning algorithms and everything else that unpicking it is quite a difficult and challenge. So, yeah, there is a big piece for anybody in a leadership role in organisations today to navigate the next revolution, though, you know, and how that's going to, you know, it's bigger than the internet was. And I remember the internet being a big revolution. Yeah, when I did my MBA, I was, that was all anybody was talking about as the next big thing. Yeah, this is going to be even, and we don't even understand how it's going to impact yet. So it's back to, for me, about business context. It's about actually looking at your sector, your environment, you know, as a leader, how is it impacting, and building that skill set and that awareness.
Yes, I think so. And I think one of the issues around, and I agree with you, David, that we're not, you know, it's not clear yet. I mean, this is all, you know, all to become much clearer as we go about what, you know, what AI is really going to do, how it's going to help us. But I think there is an issue in that technologists in any organization may well want to implement this and that and do this and that without necessarily understanding how that achieves the end goal for the business. And, you know, is it truly generating value? You know, can it be delivered at a cost and then sold at a price which is actually going to work? So I think, I guess what I'm saying is you have to separate the hype that exists right now from the realities of what the real practical business implications really are.
That's really interesting, that, because obviously having had businesses myself, technology hits you hard no matter what business you're in. When do you buy? Do you buy now? Wait till you know what's really happening? Do you get left behind? Or are you buying something now that doesn't actually give us what it says on the tin? And for me, that was always a big question. Do you think AI is really going to deliver what's on the tin? Because there's a lot of doubting Thomases out there saying, well, do you know, this may be it. Or are we all going to be sitting on the beach with your feet up with a cocktail thinking, good old AI sorting us out? I don't know which way it's going to go.
No, I think it's almost impossible to, it's hard to generalize, I think, about this. I think, you know, there are many cases where AI is obviously being used in a, you know, in amazing ways, and, you know, the technology.
Usually by our students, by the way. I just thought I'd mention it.
But I think there are also many instances that I've seen where, you know, large amounts of money and resources being, you know, being put into AI-based processes where there's no clarity, there's no clear, there's nothing clear about why they're doing that.
Does that go back to having a strategy? At the moment, we're buying something without the strategy to actually implement stuff.
I still think we're largely in that early adopter stage with it, aren't we? It's people playing with it, it's people trying to make it work. And then the trouble is, because there is so much hype about it, then people are jumping on that without understanding it and using it effectively. And you see all sorts of slightly cranky implementations, you know, with bots and those sorts of things that aren't quite delivering what we want them to deliver. I can't even remember what I was trying to get information about, but I knew I was, at the weekend, I was on somebody's website, probably shouldn't name the business anyway, and I was trying to get the information out of the system, and somebody programmed it, obviously thinking they'd been quite clever. So I don't understand that question. I'm still learning. Yeah. And I got to the point, I actually typed in, how do I talk to a human? I'm sorry, I don't understand that. There's a lot of, I think that's my point. There's a lot of unsophisticated application out there, but the businesses that are taking it seriously and are learning, it's back to, are we in that lean startup mode with AI? Are we learning about it and using it effectively? That, from a leadership perspective, that's where you need to be.
Yes, I absolutely think so. And I think one thing I would say as well is one thing I'm, in some of the mentoring I do, a lot of the AI tools that exist, they can increase productivity by substantial amounts these days. So even just in, you know, using something like ChatGPT or whatever, people running businesses and this is looking at it the other way, you can do an awful lot more now in a short space of time than you ever could. But you still need the human filter. Yeah, you still need the experience to know whether what these things are turning out are what you need. Is it correct? Because, of course, it's not always correct. And so, you know, I see cases now where people are using these tools and they're not actually sometimes doing that. So you see mistakes creeping into company documents and this and that, what have you. And it sometimes becomes very clear, oh, well, this has been generated by this. And so I think that is also an area where we need to be very, very careful now about how these tools are used.
Yeah. So is the strategy then, be an early adopter, wait until it's actually working, or, well, wait till it's actually absolutely done we've missed the boat?
A long-standing friend and former colleague always has had the view that with new technology, you should be just behind the leading edge. You don't want to be the early adopters because they're the ones that will take the cost of learning how to use it effectively. You want to be at the front of the next wave, as it were, because they're the people that will really get the value out of
it. Does that go down to personality then? Because I'm 100% with you there, Dave. Being a technophobe, I'm a little bit perhaps 1 foot behind you. But this idea, it's all adapting. We haven't really worked out what this thing's going to do. Is it going to eat the world? Is it going to save the world? What do we do?
I think in generating any product or any system, I think, you know, if you look at the old product management practices, the thing is to understand, well, what does the user need? What is it that they want to do? What is it that creates value for them and for the business and for all the stakeholders? And I think we have to be careful not to lose sight of that, and that just because a technology does a certain thing, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's fulfilling a real need, which is generating value at the end of the day. And so I think, to me, we can't allow the technology to remove all of the best practices in product development and system development and lose sight of, you know, some of the things that have stood companies in good stead for a long time.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's not yet innovative. People are trying to teach innovative systems, but they are only, you know, it's teaching, you know, the creativity is the, I mean, I'm no expert, but that's the big challenge with technology, isn't it? It's, you know, if you look at where it's been used creatively, it gets criticized very quickly because it is derivative, because the only way it can be creative is to look at other people's creative efforts and to draw off them. But we've always done that as well. So
haven't we come a full circle then? Because what we've actually done is said, we need the technology people to be able to use this stuff, but we need the people to know what the people want for us to get the techies to do. And then we get the strategy people in because that's our strategy, having used the other two.
Yeah, and I think we've already seen quite a few examples in the world of, you know, AI-based systems that are doing things that have raised either in some cases alarm or confusion or doubt, and you know, somebody somewhere has sat and enabled and built these systems to do this without maybe very much thought about what the end result of that thing is.
Elon Musk has just felt the price of that now.
I was going to say, we've done quite well. We've managed to skirt around mentioning Grok, but anyway. to bring it back to the kind of, that's back to the leadership bit, isn't it? It's about having that, you know, who is at the centre of the organisation that is setting the agenda and the goals and priorities and ensuring that that is followed kind of effectively. Yeah, you know, that's the challenge today with AI, as it's always been with any significant development. If you go back to fire and flintlocks, you know, and everything else,
isn't that ultimately bringing us back to the ethics then? Because as I say with Elon Musk, isn't the ethics we don't actually know where AI fits with ethics. Let's see what happens, and then when there's a pullback, that's our line for the ethics that we're drawing.
Motivated blindness is a psychological term, isn't it? Indirect, you know, blindness, where because it's been done by the system and we're not directly
the willful blindness.
I think that again, that's probably a whole other conversation for another day. I think I'll come back to, which is about, you know, the leadership position here is about setting the agenda, and it's about using the technology in a responsible way. And we'd all recognise that. But yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation, gents. I'm conscious that I probably need to wrap us up. I do have our usual final question to ask you both. I know, George, you've answered this before. You may have a new answer or something you want to add to previous answers. But our final question, and we've asked all our contributors this, is who's your management hero? That can be personal, professional, somebody who's inspired or influenced you in your career. So I'll come to you, Martin.
Well, in my case, actually, it's my dad. My dad was a mechanical engineer, professional man, and both as a dad and as a businessman, he set an amazing example. You know, obviously from the early stage for me, and I know that, you know, I used to talk with him a lot about leadership. He ran the central engineering facility in the steel industry in Scunthorpe, and used to talk a lot about leadership and management. And I think he, even in the days when people, you know, were not really talking too much about the soft skills side of leadership, he was a person who very much was in tune with that, and I think really cared for his people on his teams and led his teams in a very good way, and I think was very effective. And that was my introduction, really, to all of this. And so for me, you know, he was a great role model and was really, I suppose, my hero in that sense.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Now, I'm in an awkward position because I've actually come up with two other people.
Go on, that's fine.
When I was looking at this, and one of the key phrases we've used today is ethics. And then I thought about a colleague of mine in the sociology department, Brian Mitchell. And Brian says something that really resounded with me and indeed guides the way I live my life. And he said, in the world of ethics, if you see something that you don't agree with and you're prepared to walk past it, you're agreeing to live in a society where that's normal.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you've just distilled sensitivity and harassment and all those sorts of trainings down into a sentence that we should all live by. Brilliant. Thank you very much, both. If people would like to reach out to you, is there an easy way to contact you?
Yes, actually, for me, it's my business email is martin.hill@idea.com. That's AIDIA.
Brilliant, thank you.
I'm on a university website, and it's g.madine, which is g.madine, then the number one, @bradford.ac.uk.
As George said, colleagues here at the university, we're usually pretty easy to find on the university website. If you want to follow the school on social media, we've got LinkedIn and, of course, the aforementioned X. I don't know if we did mention it or not, but we talked around it, didn't we? So it's @BradManagement, or I'm @DavePSpicer. If you want to email us about the podcast, it's BACE, which stands for Business and Community Engagement, BACE@bradford.ac.uk. Really hope you've liked what you've heard. Please do subscribe if that's the case and leave us a 5-star review. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
If you've got a project that you'd love to get done, but you're struggling with the time and resources to do that, that's something that we can help you with. Bradford Business Challenge projects are where we get our students to do, as part of their dissertation, a piece of applied management work for a business like yourself. Either one of our final year undergraduate or MSc students, with the support of an academic mentor, will be able to work on that project for you. There's no cost for you as a business. All we ask for you is to set up with us that project, give us a kind of outline brief that the student will go away and work into a full proposal for you, and then you'll be meeting and liaising with them and their academic advisor to get that project delivered. Because we have multiple students doing these over the course of the year, there's usually a group of students looking for any project at one time. So if that's something that you're interested in and you'd like to know more about, please reach out to us at BACE, base@bradford.ac.uk.